Welcome to That's a Thing, a sometimes belated, already outdated guide to your teens, tweens, and everything under 20. I'm Elizabeth.
And I'm Karen. We're a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown, community supported.
Yes. And we are not doing a normal episode right now. We're doing a bonus episode because we watched a thing and we want to talk about it.
That's right. We made you some content.
Yes. That's not the last time you're going to hear that word. So we watched Inside together, or I watched Inside, and then I'm like, Mom, you should watch Inside. And then we watched Inside, and then I watched Inside again, which has been a common viewing experience for people who watch Inside, is they continue to watch Inside after.
Just to be clear, it's Bo Burnham, colon, Inside.
Yeah, that's the title, but also everybody just calls it Inside because that's what makes sense.
Okay.
Inside is a sketch comedy musical Netflix special created by and starring Bo Burnham. The hour and a half long special was written and recorded by Bo over the pandemic year and hops between skits, songs, and moments of artistic and existential crisis. It's super light, as you can tell, and a fun watch sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah.
Overall, Mom, what did you think?
I thought it was a tour de force. I thought it was like amazing talent on display, and I never would have watched it if you hadn't made me, and I'm glad you did.
That's always nice. I like when that's the outcome of I make Mom watch something. And this is your first foray into Bo Burnham's comedy, right?
Yes. All of my knowledge of Bo Burnham up till now has been vicarious. So I have heard people talk about how great Eighth Grade, the movie that he wrote, mm-hmm. was, and I have heard people talk about his performance in Promising Young Woman, and I have heard people talk about like his songs and his YouTube presence and his stand-up comedy, but I have never consumed any of those things before because I only mostly consume culture through hearing people talk about it on podcasts.
Shocking. You're so clearly the target demographic of that. Yeah. So I've seen at least one of the of Bo's Netflix specials before. I don't think it made a huge impact on me. It's lasted in the meme culture, at least. Very, very talented comedic musician, which is a very difficult thing to be. So I'm always impressed by that. Mm-hmm. So I kind of knew what to expect going into it, and you went in totally unsure of what it would be.
Yeah. I want to clarify your connection with him. Did you know him as a YouTuber? Did you watch him as a YouTuber?
No, he was like on YouTube when I was just starting to watch YouTube, and it wasn't really overlapping at all.
Okay. No.
I'm more familiar with him post Netflix specials, and then he kind of fell off my radar when he quit doing live stand-up. And now he's back on my radar because he did another Netflix special.
Right.
And everybody on my feed was talking about it. So,
interesting.
Yeah.
On your Twitter feed?
And Instagram.
Okay.
Yeah. Lots of people very passionately discussing Inside and their 15th rewatch of it.
Wow.
Yeah. One of the people who's been talking about it a lot is Ms. Lola, who the general audience won't know, but you are familiar with because we listened to Lolita Podcast.
Okay, yeah.
By Jamie Loftus, and Miss Lola is the YouTuber who talked about Lolita on that podcast. That person is very into Inside.
Okay.
There you go.
Interesting. We'll link to that in the show notes.
Yeah. Do you have any other general impressions you want to get out of the way before we get into the treacherous spoiler territory and tell people to stop listening because they won't understand what we're talking about anymore?
Well, maybe just like one more sidebar on what do you mean by Bo Burnham's presence in the meme culture? How does that manifest itself?
Oh, like, I would say one of the more enduring songs he's had is the Left Brain, Right Brain song. I am the left brain, I am the left brain, I work real hard till your inevitable death brain. It's like it's like a conversation between the logical mind and the creative mind. And that's lasted for a really long time in various formats on YouTube and now on TikTok. And people do animatics of his songs fairly often. Those come across my feed kind of every once in a while. They reappear. Yeah. So that's what I mean.
Okay.
And then I'm sure there are like jokes he's made that have lasted and get repeated all the time. I just can't really think of any because I'm not a super fan who has that memorized.
Right. But there were moments during this show where you were thinking that some of the songs were crafted for their memeability?
Well, I didn't say that. I said, like, there are songs that get crafted for their memeability. I would say this is more that because Bo started on YouTube and doing independent comedy online, he just kind of naturally is able to create songs that are successful virally, which is a fun thing to be during a pandemic year, successful virally. But if that makes sense, like he knows how to write a hook that will catch and will get circulated and create buzz, but it doesn't feel unnatural that that is the case because he's writing internet songs and that's what internet songs are like.
Right.
In some ways, he defined internet songs. So, of course, he's good at writing them. Astonishing. We could do a whole episode about internet music. I'm not sure I want to, but it's certainly its own beast. And I'm not sure I can explain it or cleanly define it. I just know it when I see it. And there are some songs in Inside that are absolutely in that territory.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. Do you want to list any content warnings for people about what's in the show and also what we might be discussing as we discuss the show?
Okay. Well, I would say that it's hard to talk about this show without getting into some adult themes and mature language.
Yeah.
So sometimes I know that some of our listeners listen with their kids. This might not be one that you want to listen to with your kids.
Yeah. Unless your kids have already watched and enjoyed Inside, in which case they're already tainted and you can do no further harm.
Yeah, so you decide whether you want to be a cool mom or pretend.
You just gave so many kids permission to call their parents uncool.
Wow.
They're already allowed to call them old. You're going to add uncool to the list?
I wear that badge honorably. There are also several points in the show that discuss suicide, and so we will probably discuss suicide.
Yeah, so be aware of that. Additionally, there's no epilepsy warning before the show, but I do want to mention there's a fair amount of flashing lights, so if you're worried about that, be aware of that, be prepared for that. And also a content warning for content. There is a lot of content. We're going to say the word content a lot. It's going to lose its meaning. So there you go.
There you go.
I think that covers everything. Okay. Before we slip into spoiler territory, do we want to slip into ad territory?
Let's slip into ad territory and tell you that this episode of That's a Thing is brought to you by the Business Council of Alberta. If you are passionate about Alberta and its future, we're in favor of the future, right?
If we believe in it, sure.
Yeah, check out The Brief, which is an Alberta Better podcast series presented by the Business Council of Alberta. Scott Crockett and Brittany Brander co-host The Brief. They talk to Alberta's business leaders, innovators, disruptors, and entrepreneurs about the big challenges Albertans are facing, from unemployment to childcare to mental health to economic diversification. They also celebrate the stories of growth, innovation, and prosperity, and discover bold ideas that aim to make life better for Albertans. You can find new episodes of The Brief on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. You can also listen at businesscouncilab.ca. businesscouncilab.com/AlbertaBetterPodcast. That is businesscouncilab.com/AlbertaBetterPodcast. New episodes drop every other Tuesday.
Woo!
Woo!
Okay, so we're just gonna go through Inside kind of song by song with a few other moments, and we're just gonna talk when we have thoughts. We definitely put this together in an organized manner, and this won't be an unlistenable mess, I promise. Appropriately, it starts off with basically just a series of songs, and the first of those songs is called Content.
Yes.
Which is an introduction to the show and why it's being made, because pandemic, because isolated and home, because hasn't done big art project in a long time. Very relatable. And yeah, it's just a little short snippet that introduces you to the show. I have a lot of thoughts about the word content, and obviously Bo does too, because it appears a lot in the show. What does the word content make you think of, Mom?
It gives me a big sigh. So in journalism circles, this is a hated word because it is seen to be kind of what replaced what we were doing before the internet.
The BuzzFeedification.
It destroyed everything, yeah.
If there's bimbofication, there's BuzzFeedification, I guess. That's the equivalent.
And it to me, it's a word that emerged because we needed a noun that referred to things on the internet that weren't just text, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you were going to be able to tell a story either through text or video or audio or a data visualization or whatever, we needed like one word to say what this was. And so content in my world became that what that was. But because it got all tangled up in the content mills and the SEO chasing and the constant, you know, creation of new things to deliver ad impressions beside, it really came to have a negative connotation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I am really wrapped up in the word content in terms of how it's used by independent creators, online small creators. And huge creators like Bo, right? And the reason is I think it's a word people use to minimize the fact that what they make is art, because calling it art sounds pretentious. And the word content cheapens it in a way that's more comfortable. That is my hot take there.
That's interesting.
That I've been holding on to for a long time.
We literally had a silent walk because she didn't want to drop any of the things that she was going to say during this today. Anyway, yes.
Yeah. So there you go. That's the thing. But yeah, it's just I'm used to hearing people say like, oh, I've made you some content. Here's some content for you guys. This is the content.
People say that. Like they say that
content is that's how it's used in the song.
I know, but I thought it was ironic.
No, that's like, I mean, probably semi-ironic. Spoiler for the show, everything is under several layers of irony and disavowal, and trying to get to the core of it is a fruitless errand, and I don't believe in trying to do that. That's not my interest. But yeah, no, that's a pretty accurate reflection of the way content is used, and I would say it's absolutely used at times where art is really more appropriate.
Yeah. What's wrong with word art? That seems like, I don't know, like swishy and impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, but people on the internet aren't comfortable with being swishy and impressive. That makes you seem pompous. That makes you seem full of yourself. The internet at large is about minimizing yourself and minimizing your intelligence and your work. In order to kind of create this humble, authentic persona. Not always true, obviously. Logan Paul shouted out in a later song. Obviously doesn't follow that route, and that kind of brand is more about being big and flashy, but that's generally seen as quite gauche by the broader internet content creation community.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And as I said before, we're going to see the word content a lot. And I've done this as well, actually, on the podcast, is I've referred to it as like, we're making content. I'm making content for you guys right now. I figured out some content for you.
Right.
And that's maybe something I should start trying to unlearn. Content is pretty immediately followed up by comedy, which is, kind of making fun of, the sort of privileged white guy comedians who put the purpose of their life into their comedy and then expect everybody else to see it as significant as they want it to be, I would say. Do you have any deeper thoughts on comedy?
What I was thinking when I was watching this is it's so many layers, right? So definitely the ridiculousness of the idea of the world needs direction from a white guy like me, he says.
Yeah,
and then thinking, well, like, what do I do? What's my talent? I can tell you a joke. And then so then the chorus or the kind of the repeating line is like, something bad happens to you, call me, I'll tell you a joke. And I was thinking that some of those words, but then also the imagery that you see during that song, reminded me so much of startup culture, where you have like these often tech bros who are thinking like, I need to, what's the problem that I'm solving here, right?
Yeah,
and there's lots of like a whiteboard and Venn diagrams and all the kind of stuff that he's doing is like, to me, more of a satire of the sort of tech bro savior even than the comedian savior. Yeah.
And the idea of the white savior comes up quite a bit.
Yes.
As well.
And he physically resembles many times during the show the sort of Euro version of Jesus, like the white Jesus Jesus would have looked like, but he but those pictures that we're used to seeing,
the shredded version
that's
on the cross,
he's on top of everything else extremely technically adept, so everything is beautifully lit even though he's doing it by himself and amazingly shot, and so you get the feeling that no shot is accidental and that he's thought very hard about what he's doing. And so the sort of white Christ imagery is also obviously.
And comedy is the type of video where it rewards like pausing on every frame to read the background text, which is something I've always done for everything I've ever watched, which is why I don't watch things with people. It's like a pretty big reason. It's like, what if they wrote something interesting on the sign in the background?
Uh-huh.
And half the time the sign says, if you're reading this, you're a nerd, which fair, true. comedy is kind of appropriately followed up with the first really just comedy song, which is FaceTime with my mom, parentheses, tonight.
Do you think that's just a comedy song?
I mean, I'm sure there's some truth to it, but just lyrically, a lot of it is just making fun of boomers and making like a big deal about talking to your mom, which is like, it is the only social interaction he's having, clearly, in the context of the piece.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying like it's a comedy song to say that it isn't cohesive or that it doesn't have depth. I'm just saying that like it's the sort of song where it doesn't need to be in the special for it to stand as a series of jokes with music in the background, in the way that content and comedy are more wedded to the special and more complete by being part of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's like a single that's still on an album, but it can be released as a single.
Yeah. Well, and for one thing, it's a whole song, yeah. right? Which is yeah. not the case with a lot of things that are in this show.
What qualifies as a whole song, really? Yeah.
But as a mom, I hear a through line and I see a through line in this show mm-hmm. about moms as yeah. well. And so I do think that he plants a seed in this song that he calls back to later.
Yeah.
The other thing that you only get if you watch the show and not if you listen to that song on its own is there's a moment where he's like frustrated that his mom's put her thumb on the camera and yeah. gets like too upset about the frustration of trying to talk her through this tech issue. It's a bit of a prelude to future tantrums, I think.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Are you looking forward to holding your phone screen really close to your face? I attempt to talk you through being extremely far away. Is that a fun thing you're imagining and looking forward to?
I'm gonna like deliberately be more incompetent technically than you're used to, just so that you can have the experience.
No, why? I'm not even that good at tech stuff. It's only standing next to you that I'm impressive.
That's mean. I've mastered lots of things, but anyway. That's
okay.
True.
I would actually argue you understand more than me. It's just you forget how to do things constantly that I intuit.
Actually, what our actual tech thing is that I am so impatient that I can't read instructions anymore. And if I would just slow down, I could figure it out.
Read the sign in the background that says you're a huge nerd.
No. I want it to be very obvious.
From that lightness to the heaviness of how the world works, which is a more overtly political song. There's hints of the political in comedy, but how the world works is very explicitly and complexly political, I'd say. I would also call it the first true villain song. Mm. Of which there will be a couple. Mm-hmm. You could argue that comedy is a villain song, but because the kind of character that Bo is portraying is so often the hero, I have a hard time classifying it as that. It only becomes a villain song within the context of the rest of the piece.
Okay.
Like retroactively a villain song. So on your first listen through, How the World Works is the first villain song, and it's in a lot of ways a critique of white allyship, which is really interesting coming from a very famous, very privileged person. And it has Sacco in it.
And it's set up, besides having a sock puppet in it, it is set up like a Sesame Street song.
Yeah.
Like with a very apparently wholesome, jaunty
yeah.
kind of song, but then it takes a very, 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 very dark turn.
Yeah, it's very much like displaying the facade, like the lie of capitalism, which is everybody works together and everybody is doing great, and you're doing great by being part of this, and you, white ally, are fantastic and in a fantastic ideal world. And then the white ally hears literally any critique of that idea, and they, because they're trying to be an ally, go, oh yeah, well, I can work with this and still be a good person in a good world. I just have to learn a bit more. And then they get pushback, and then they're like, okay, well, buddy, you've destroyed my perfect paradise, and now I'm going to exercise my privilege against you, right? Mm-hmm. It's very much the sort of darker part of the Karen epidemic mm-hmm. that we had in mm-hmm. some ways. But yeah, I really like this song.
You like it? Okay.
Yeah.
But not to listen to. You appreciate the skit. is what you're saying. Or do you like the song?
well, I do like it. I enjoy listening to the song.
Even like the song, if you listen on Spotify, keeps Sako's scream in
it. I know.
It.
Yes. You've been listening to it on Spotify?
I just needed to refresh my memory today so that I could speak.
Yeah. No, I think part of it is that it is literally what my Twitter feed looks like.
Mm.
And so because of that, I'm just like, yes, I will listen to my Twitter feed. This is much catchier than my Twitter feed. And so it is better.
I think it's besides being a critique of white allyship, it's also a critique of neoliberalism.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of hold those together in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And just sort of speaking to people who are, I guess, centrists is the mm-hmm. Beau character. And then Sako is more radical. And he gets.
And Sako's obviously also more affected by the issues.
Right.
Like, Beau is an outside observer of the issues. And so he isn't able to, like, acknowledge and accept the emotions of somebody who's actually affected by them. Like, that don't get emotional thing has been so harmful to people trying to get help because. Oh, as soon as you get emotional, then and that leads to people who aren't intimately affected by issues speaking on them instead of amplifying people who are more emotional about them. It's a whole thing. This could be a Twitter feed, but we're not doing it. We're not doing it. We're going to move on.
Okay.
Then there's the I am a former comedian turned social brand consultant, which is just kind of a series of hits against, once again, the kind of neoliberal capitalism pinkwashing space where it's like, oh yeah, Maltesers really cares about child poverty in Malaysia or whatever is an issue right now, right? Yeah. And it's like, just no. The idea that brands have to care, right?
Yeah.
Which is just not a very effective political approach.
Well, I don't know. No. It's not effective with some people. It is effective with other people because they wouldn't do it if it wasn't, right? And we've just come through like a year of extreme posturing in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But 'twas ever thus, and it's because it seemed to be good marketing to be seen to be caring about things, even if you don't really, or to be gesturing towards things, right? I wrote down in my notebook while I was watching that one, big Simon Sinek energy, which you won't know what that means.
I have no idea.
But we will link to that in the show notes. It's kind of, it's very TED Talk. It's very guru.
It reminds me of those things that circulate on Twitter, like from Now This or whatever, where it's just somebody like talking about the big noble project they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, again, this is one of many skits that are very much portraying the media space of the internet within the Netflix special. White women's Instagram. Just that. <I'm sorry>.
All right, well, this is one of the breakout hits of it.
Yeah.
Because.
And this is another one that kind of can function as a single.
Yeah, it has a beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah.
And actually a dramatic arc, I think, to it. And it is a just shockingly accurate description of a certain kind of Instagram feed that you will absolutely recognize if you listen to the song and have spent any time on Instagram.
Yeah, even if you just like hear the word, the phrase Instagram feed and then imagine something, it's that. You did it. It's done.
What do you think of this song?
Okay, so I'm a proud white woman's Instagram defender. I find the lyrics quite moving, actually, in terms of like capturing obviously a very sheltered life, but not necessarily always a happy one. And so when that life is happy, that's still a human triumph. Like, it brings back some of the empathy that you might lose earlier on in the musical, which I enjoy, or the musical sections. I know you were less bothered by the lyrics and more by the video, which went with it. And I think I figured out why I'm not bothered the same way you are. But first, I want you to talk about why it bugs you.
Okay, so if we're just talking about how he is acting while he is singing this song, it feels like he is making fun of women, like of a certain kind of woman. And he's like, it feels a little sexist the way that he is like, oh, you're so shallow, and you're like, yeah, it's just like his body language suggests a disdain for the people that for the people that he's talking about in the song.
Yeah, I don't read that same disdain into the body language, I guess, to begin with. I understand the amount of like social baggage that would lead you to see a man acting like a woman and not necessarily in overtly positive way and go like making fun of women, which is what's happening in a way. Mm-hmm. But I guess there's a type of parody which it's clear he went so extensively into his research and into recreating these kind of iconic images of the white woman's Instagram feed, that makes it almost more like a labor of love or a labor of understanding of the medium, because it's such a perfect recreation.
So he's done such a close reading of it that it's...
Yeah, because what respectful. It says is that he cared enough to learn exactly what makes this image look like this, how much preparation goes into getting an image like this, all of that stuff. And so people, I think... because there hasn't been a huge backlash to this. And I think the reason for that is people look and they can tell that this isn't a shallow guy puts a towel on his head and like messy lipstick on and then makes fun of women type skit, which he could have done. Mm-hmm. This is a production, and the critiques are thought out and not just woman be shopping level.
Right.
Critiques, right? Like the line, a quote from Lord of the Rings, inaccurately attributed to Martin Luther King, yes. Right? Like that's such a clear pinpointing and critique of something. I tend to read things charitably, which mm-hmm. you wouldn't think, you know? Knowing how much I like to complain, but I do tend to be charitable about things. And so I choose to read this song as Bo having that degree of awareness and care. But I'm also aware that people sometimes use progressive language as a cloak to critique more marginalized groups. And so putting white in front of woman is sometimes used to make fun of women in a way where the wokes won't get mad at you. I don't think that's what's happening here. I think it's accurate titling. Yeah, I think it's more specific and clearer and better. Mm-hmm. But also it does resemble a pattern that I've seen before. And so I understand why people might have mixed thoughts, but I like it.
Okay, I have more things to say about this one.
Okay. This is the Elizabeth and Karen talk about white women's Instagram and also the rest of the podcast.
We're white women who are on Instagram, although our Instagrams are not like this in any way. But the song goes through this dramatic arc of sort of like making fun of the basicness of the images mm-hmm. that you see in the typical feed of that kind of person.
And that surface level, like white feminism, progressivism as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Like very surface. But
the word hate is on one cheek and the word proud is on the other cheek. Yeah.
Then there is a bridge where he describes an image from this imaginary Instagrammer of a picture of her mom who has died and remembering and speaking in her voice to her mom. Mm-hmm. And so there's interesting through line from I'm a FaceTime with my mom tonight, yeah. Right? But my reaction to that was different from a lot of commentators that I looked up afterwards to that, because what I have learned since I watched it is that a lot of people find that very moving, like mm-hmm. like tears in their eyes and making connections to their own lives. Whereas on first watch, my reaction to that was, now he's just being mean because he is making fun of people. He's being mean, but he's also kind of right. pointing out the commodification of grief that has happened mm-hmm. on social media. People don't only share on social media the good stuff, like most of that song is about. They also go for clicks for the worst things that have ever happened in their life. And I don't like that.
Yeah.
I find that creepy and weird. And yet I know also that people actually in real life derive a tremendous amount of support and comfort from putting out the worst things that have happened to them and getting the flood of love and sympathy and empathy back.
Yeah. It's an interesting tightrope walk. And I think it's sometimes hard to tell when it's catharsis and when it's clout chasing. And it's not necessarily always one or the other. But I think part of the reason why people find it so touching is because the first few skits kind of train us to let go of empathy or don't encourage empathy. And it's kind of the first moment, because Beau is intentionally unlikable for a lot of this, I would say. I don't think he'd get offended by that. It's the first moment maybe since FaceTime with my mom, and even that's kind of so jokey, it's hard to find that empathy, where you really, like, given space to just step into somebody else's shoes and feel for them, even if they aren't perfect and they're very obviously doing things you would do differently. So yeah. So the next song is Unpaid Intern, which is one of those little songlets.
Yeah, songlet, that's right.
It's a very sketch style, so he's like in black and white, and he has these dark sunglasses, and he's doing this kind of worker song, but it's about being an unpaid intern. And he gets through the first bit, and he has his repeating, I'm an unpaid intern, or whatever, unpaid intern. And I'm not going to get any of the chords right for anything we do, because I'm utterly tone deaf. But anyway, he goes through that, and then he kind of gets to the first point where you'd expect the song to start to repeat into the next verse, and he just does this high-pitched, goofy scatting, and then it cuts out.
Yeah. Like, abruptly.
Yeah.
And then he does a reaction video.
Yes.
To that. And then he does a reaction to his reaction video. And does he do one more?
Yeah, it's three layers.
Of so, reaction video inception. One thing that surprised me about listening to the album on Spotify is that that's all this, that's, it's just a songlet. That's it. Like, there is no more. I kind of thought maybe he wrote all these songs fully and then chopped them up for the purposes of the dramatic arc of Inside. But no, it's only that.
That never occurred to me as a thing he would have done. No, because that's kind of like somebody somewhere at some point, I've seen a lot of Twitter and absorbed it and forgotten names, so a lot of my ideas are purely plagiarized from Twitter. And you just have to accept that. That's a general rule for anything I say. But somebody said that Inside was basically a video essay, And I think there's some truth to that in terms of a video essay is what happens when you have one person or small production crew putting something together on their own. And so I'm kind of used to sketches that end abruptly or things that exist for just as long as they need to exist to serve the narrative and then dropping. And so it never occurred to me that he would have written a full version of Unpaid Intern and then cut it and then did reacting to my reaction to my reaction. Totally wouldn't even have occurred to me that he, like, I see them very much as like written together with that cut mm-hmm. in place, because that's how I perceive this kind of content being put together. Yeah, but reacting to my reacting is really fun. I think you really enjoyed it.
I did. Yeah. Well, because it's so smartly structured mm-hmm. and beautifully timed. I'd love to know how many takes it took to get it so that his patter, which does not seem scripted, but is still extremely right mm-hmm. words to say at that moment, is perfectly timed. It's, yeah. I like things like that.
Yeah, yeah. It's another moment of taking the mediums that are common to the internet and using those. The reaction video or the celebrity reaction video mm-hmm. as well is a thing. I never watch them because I'm like, why would I care? I don't want to, like, I never watch the director's cut tapes where they're talking about it over the thing. Like, just let me enjoy the art that you made. After Unpaid Intern is Bezos One, which yes. I love. Yes. Why don't you like him?
What is there to like? I don't understand.
It's catchy. It's fun. It makes social commentary on Silicon Valley.
Sort of, but not very much. Like, it is the slightest song here. Like,
no, Bezos 2 is the slightest song.
Okay, Bezos 2 is the slightest song, but I don't know. I just don't want to think about Jeffrey Bezos and his stupid
yeah,
face.
But I think it's actually quite clever to have a song about Jeffrey Bezos, because if you think about the sort of living situation that Bo is portraying in Inside, where mm-hmm. you're living alone in your house and you have phone connections to people, but you don't necessarily have the ability to see anybody in person. One of the only things you have to look forward to at a certain point is an Amazon package arriving, because right. then you're getting something. There's a change to your routine. You have a new object to mess around with. And so I could totally see, like, Jeffrey Bezos kind of consuming somebody's mind at a certain point.
Becoming the Godhead that delivers yeah. your yeah. salvation every day.
and at the same time, I know I told you this and you were like, well, they're still doing that, which is true. But there was kind of a phase in the pandemic where it was just the billionaire wars yeah. and everybody's like going to space and has all of these new ideas.
He's literally going to space tomorrow.
Yeah. And who's going to be the new richest guy, and are we going to hit this money the capstone? So I think it actually kind of spoke to the sort of billionaire hate watching phase that kind of again overcame my Twitter feed. Like, that was very yeah. much a moment. And this is followed up by a bit of dialogue, and the bit I grabbed as a quote was, maybe allowing giant digital media corporations to exploit the neurochemical drama of our children for profit. Maybe that was a bad call yeah. by us. Which is exactly the sort of understated delivery that I'm very used to as mm-hmm, well. Mm-hmm. Online, I'm sure it appears elsewhere. It's that sort of comedic timing. But yeah, it's very, yeah, true. That was probably bad. probably not great. And this is followed up by the very adult song that might be awkward to talk about, so I don't know if we want to. I know we warned about mature content, but I don't know what we're holding ourselves to. Well,
I think we can have earned the right to say the word sexting.
Cool.
That is what that song is.
Yeah.
That is what that song is about. It's also a kind of, like, there's not a lot. It's not very deep.
Yeah, it's another one of the singles.
It kind of made me wonder if this was, like, kind of his equivalent of a trunk tune, like that people who write musicals. There was a certain moment in the history of musical theater where composers would just have what they would call trunk tunes, which was like stuff they wrote, got cut, they're going to resurrect it at some point and put it in the next show.
Sure.
And I feel like Bo might have written this some other time and decided, you know what would fit right here? Sexting. Let's do it.
Yeah, it doesn't especially add to Inside as a mounting series of things. It does have very funny lines in it, I will say. The eraser headline to get me on the bus.
Yeah. That's all we're going to say about that. Yeah, but yes. Yeah.
Although the she sends back a snowman, crisis averted, has been living rent-free in my head. As like the intentional, what does it mean? Like the randomness. People say like randomness isn't funny. If it's unexplained randomness done right, it is, because that is hilarious. Brilliant. Sexting is followed up. There, I said it. I'm an adult. Okay. It's followed up by another one of those little sketches that is parroting a kind of internet content. We're using the word again. And it's the, I just wanted to make a really quick video to say thank you. Like, it's the thank you video where you're building up that parasocial relationship with your fans and telling them, like, don't stop watching, keep watching. And he's holding a knife the whole time. It's just, it's so like captivating.
No,
I really liked it. It
creeped
really
me out so much. I hated it.
It's maybe the most horror moment. So that explains our difference.
Two horror things. That. Oh. Well, that, the Sako thing is actually horrifying.
Yeah.
Like, scary.
Constant
at the end.
State of sleep paralysis.
But the other horror trope that punctuates this whole thing is canned laughter.
Yes, yes.
The studio audience laughing hilariously at things that are not funny. That's quite horrifying to me.
Yeah, yeah. And it's kind of unreliable when they'll show up.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, anyway, I like that bit because it does a little bit sometimes feel like in those thank you videos or I need your help videos or milestone videos, like, don't leave me, you're the only reason I have money to live and you're the only thing supporting my ego now. Yeah. So please stick around. Yeah. And that's followed up by Look Who's Inside Again, which is a short little song that reflects a little bit on Bo starting out and then kind of has this melancholic ending, which reflects on how he's kind of in the same place right now. Mm-hmm. And I think my favorite, I'm not really good at music theory. I think my favorite, like, lyrical musical sequence is the bit at the end where it's like, well, well, look who's inside again, went out to look for a reason to hide again. Well, well, buddy, you found it. Now come out with your hands up. We have you surrounded. Like, the way that hits my ear.
Yeah.
I love it so much. I'll just listen to that one over and over again.
The thing that hit me about that song, and I don't even know if it's at all what he was intending, but it hit a spark in my head about this, is because screens are so captivating, it created a new job for us parents to decrease screen time mm-hmm. of kids, right? Because it was not just the TV that could take your attention. It was your phone and the iPad and the computer and the TV and the video game console and all of these things mm-hmm. that you're spending time on. And it became like a thing that parents were made to feel guilty about allowing too much of, and the corollary of that is kids being inside all the time.
Yeah.
And then there's a whole other layer of guilt about, you know, their mental health and their physical health depends on being outside, and they have to be in nature, and so many things that are wrong with kids now are connected to the fact that they are inside and on screens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You have heard me literally be anxious about this,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what was echoing in my head around, like, this sort of admonition from older generations to younger people to stop being inside. It's bad for you to be inside.
Mm-hmm. But also, it's dangerous for you to be outside is the other side of that. And in some areas more so than others, that's more true. But yeah, and this is followed by Bo watching himself, a younger version of himself, like from one of his YouTube videos. And that leads into problematic, which I have many thoughts about. Just the word problematic in general and the way it's so loosely defined and thrown around that, like, well, what is problematic? And the conclusion has seemed to be everybody and everything is problematic, because it's going to be problematic to someone and that makes it problematic to everyone. Mm-hmm. But then we also get a little bit more of that kind of white savior main character energy and that Christ imagery returning here. Yeah. Do you have thoughts before I continue the thoughts?
No, I mean, in a way, it's kind of struck me as kind of the conventional expression of and critique of the fear of cancel culture.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what I have to say about that.
there's that there for sure. He has a line when he's doing the reaction to the reaction to the reaction where he says, self-awareness doesn't absolve anyone of anything. And I think that carries through into problematic. And I really do enjoy the kind of absolutely tacky workout video sort of guy preparing for the big fight music video that he put together. Because I think there's this habit people have, and especially like white centrist and liberal dudes have this problem of they get canceled and then they start branding themselves around how they got canceled and they just keep talking and they won't stop talking and they won't stop and listen and do better, but they also don't want to brand into far right grifters, so they have to do all of this like, well, the left is getting too sensitive, and also, well, I was wrong about this, but excuses, and then it just kind of consumes their whole brand and they stop being helpful in any way and they just become these like bloated leeches of self-loathing and self-justification.
Right.
I've had to unfollow people. I thought, again, he's creating art about things that I've been seeing that I think are fairly new experiences. I talked to you before about how, like, generally it's considered the purpose of art, whatever that art is, to portray the range of human experiences. And so one of the reasons I get so excited about Inside, and that I think other very online people, because I identify as quite an online person, kind of a subclass there, this is putting out artistic interpretations of new experiences that I've had that maybe haven't slipped into the mainstream, or if they did, they'd be handled poorly by something like a stale sitcom or something. Like, it's fun to see internet stuff treated seriously and presented artistically by somebody who actually understands it enough to do that with a lot of layers and cleverness and understanding. And problematic is followed up by 30.
So this is like, okay, I'm like way older than him. So I like lack sympathy for people who feel old when they are young. But 30 is old for you, right?
Yeah,
so what do you think?
old for you. Like, I'm not in the market for one. Well, I would say because being successful in entertainment is so about relevance, right? And more so now than ever because nostalgia cycles are faster and shorter. And you can't rely on people remembering your name and you having a renaissance in a few years. Like, you have to be constantly evolving and learning new things, and your audience is going to trend younger and younger and younger, or your audience is going to dry up and you're no longer going to have one, right? Like, it's hard to pick up new followers once you reach a certain point in your career. And so it does actually make aging more of a threat, I think, now in entertainment. Mm. Like, you kind of end up branding yourself on your youthfulness and your new takes on things and your ability to quickly pick up on whatever's going on in the cultural undercurrent. And as you get older, you just naturally lose those abilities.
Right.
And so I think that makes aging seem faster and more fatal and prompts the midlife crisis to happen earlier and earlier and earlier. And I think people who are on the internet and have online entertainment careers for a long time can often be made quite unstable by that and quite, like, we're seeing all of these big YouTuber scandals now, and a lot of those kind of line up with those people hitting their 30s, actually, which is fascinating. And it's like, well, when are you going to blow up your career? When you're worried that your career is gone anyway and you're trying to hold on to it. So I do think there's, and people just call themselves old online all the time. It's part of the general culture of self-deprecation. The same thing that leads people to call their art content, I think, is to go, well, I'm so old now, right?
Right.
And 30 is the big fatal year because all of the cool influencers are in their early 20s because that's the age group that teens look up to the most.
Right.
Right. Kids always look up to a little bit older than them.
Yeah.
So I think there's a
That's not a new thing, you know. Like, the boomers themselves had a slogan, don't trust anyone over 30.
Yeah.
And then they spent the next 50 years being untrustworthy themselves. But yeah.
Told on themselves a little bit.
There is more than one dig at Zoomers through this whole thing.
Which I don't mind. Because it's like, yeah, sure. And I understand. I understand kind of where it comes from in terms of, like, you're so used to being the one that's punched down on, that being somebody who can be punched up at is really jarring to millennials now. But now they're authority figures to Zoomers, right? They're like teachers and stuff.
Yeah.
And so it feels like they're increasingly beginning to represent the authority, even as they don't feel like they have that authority themselves. It's fun to watch from my position as an enlightened elder Zoomer.
Right.
So I can look at the TikTok kids and go, y'all are dumb. And then I can look at the millennials and go, y'all are dumb. We're the only perfect age. I get to hold on to this feeling for about 3 years, maybe less by the time we're done recording this. It moves so fast now.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Now we're going to get into heavy mentions of suicide, because this is the bit that really talks about that. So if you want to skip forward 5 minutes, that seems safe. There's your warning for that. So at the end of the song 30, Bo says, 2020, I'm 30, I'll do another 10. 2030, I'll be 40 and kill myself then. And then the song ends. And then he goes into another kind of internet moment, a kind of standard acknowledgement that happens whenever self-harm language comes up. And he starts talking about, okay, well, you shouldn't kill yourself. And here's why. And then he takes a long time coming up with reasons. Then he starts explaining it and kind of referencing his own suicidality and then downplaying that and then going, well, yeah, no, you really shouldn't. And this is being projected onto himself. So there's a beau that is talking about this being projected onto the t-shirt of another beau who's just kind of looking away from it and letting it play out.
Yeah.
And I told you this is actually maybe the most internet moment in the whole thing, which says a lot given later songs.
There's a lot of internet in here. Why do you say that?
I say that because this is something that's actually, I think, under-talked about. And that's the way that language of self-deprecation and self-harm and suicide gets diluted mm-hmm. by the internet, or has been diluted by the internet. And so people will like playfully say, kill yourself.
Right.
And people will seriously say, kill yourself.
Yeah.
And it just is kind of a thing that's spread across the internet. And people say, I want to die all the time, right? And you can't really tell because there's no clear indication of tone what tweets that say, I want to die are like because I'm in traffic and what is a cry for help. And it ends up watering down the idea of seeking help and getting support because sometimes it gets misdirected at jokes.
Yeah.
And so it creates this whole like difficult linguistic blur that really obscures a genuine population of depressed and anxious people who find support online, mm-hmm. but also aren't able to carry that into feeling better because they're kind of trapped in this space of not being able to look it head on. Look it head on like he isn't when he's there looking at the other direction while the thing is happening.
Yeah.
But it's just so familiar to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a language barrier problem as well that's happened, is people will say mean things to emphasize how positive they feel.
Mm.
Like, I'm so happy I could die. That kind of oxymoronic language. People say, ugh, delete this under really good art. And artists who have autism or some other difficulty processing that, or artists who don't have English as a first language, see that and they think, oh, they hate my art.
Right.
Oh, they think I should kill myself, whatever, right? Yeah. And it's this problem, this toxicity that's slipped into online dialect and online language that actually gets in the way of people honestly communicating with each other. The internet is very focused on creating an air of authenticity and also about never being truly honest about your feelings because that's too vulnerable, basically. There we go. I got there. Those are my thoughts.
I think I have slightly different thoughts about that.
So
I feel a through line for that scene to the dead mom thing in White Woman's Instagram mm-hmm. of the commodification of depression mm-hmm. and commercialization.
Oh, they're connected, yeah.
Of that, and it made me think of Belle Let's Talk.
Oh yeah,
right. This horrible day where Belle gets a whole bunch of free advertising for promising to pay a nickel for everybody who use their hashtag. And it's meant to raise awareness about mental illness, which I don't feel we lack awareness about. It feels like it is meant to create space for people to be vulnerable, but it has just so twisted that into something that I find really hard to take. And I am a person who has in the past, like every year I have gotten more and more angry and cynical about that thing. So the first year that it came out, I retweeted it or used that hashtag with all my heart because mm-hmm. the mental health struggles is a thing that affects lots of people that I love. And then the next year, I think I wrote like maybe a Twitter thread about, you know, this is so problematic, right? And then after that, it's just like, fill your boots. I'll see you tomorrow when this is over, because it just makes me angry.
Yeah, we've reached a point now where anytime there's a piece of internet content that discusses suicide, you see Here are all the hotlines pinned in the comments or the video description or whatever. And also, I don't know if this is actually going to help anybody. I'm just putting it here on the off chance it does. Like, there's this like wholehearted lack of belief in the effectiveness of any of the tools we have. And so we just kind of will sit in the communal pit of despair and try to hold each other afloat. So, yeah. And then we have the intermission.
Yes. Okay. Let us take an intermission.
Yes.
This episode of That's a Thing is brought to you by our friends at ATB. Looking for a way to give back? If comedy's not the answer, which we know is the case, perhaps ATB Cares is a better solution. ATB Cares makes it easy for all Albertans to support the causes they care about. Donate to your favorite charity through ATB Cares, and ATB will match 20% of every dollar donated to eligible Alberta charities. Learn more and donate by visiting atbcares.com. That's atbcares.com.
Cool, cool. Mm-hmm. We have passed the intermission, and now we're in Act 2, which I would consider a little bit more mental health driven and less focused on being a comedy special. Not that we were super focused on being a comedy special, but we've kind of dropped the pretense here. And the first song back is Don't Wanna Know, which is slow and talks kind of directly to the audience who've been watching this for about 45 minutes now, and just talks a little bit about what I'd classify as kind of artistic anxieties. And I very much relate to this song because, you know, I don't like seeing fan mail. I don't like hearing any feedback on what I create. I like throwing it into the world, and then somebody could be present and somebody could not be present, and I don't need to know about it. I'm done. I made the thing. I put it out there, and I've escaped it. Which, is that a realistic thing long term to do art that way?
It's not a smart way to do art if you want to make money at it.
I do not. That sounds terrifying. This song is most effective if you are only half paying attention to inside when it comes on, because he calls you up for that, and that is spooky. Experience recommendation for the show. Don't pay attention to it until now. But yeah, and this leads into the Let's Play sketch, which is another one of those copying the internet content that's probably been his only other avenue of human interaction besides like phone conversations and packages from Jeff.
Right.
Is
within the conceit of the show.
Yeah.
Because he is understood to, I believe, not just be isolated.
Well, I would consider it irrelevant because within the confines of the show, part of the conceit of the show is that he's here working on it the whole time.
Right.
People might argue about whether that needs to be literally true in order for it to resonate. I'm the sort of death of the author person who does not care about that at all, because this is a very good and effective portrayal of somebody trying to create with very little outside stimuli, and that's what makes it emotionally true to me in a way that makes me want to talk about it. So that's right. What I have to say about that. I have complicated philosophical thoughts on this that we will not get into for time. But yeah. Like, whatever's true about how he actually put it together within the confines of the show, that is how he's putting it together, right. Which would make watching other content creators,
yes.
do things, one of the only avenues of human contact within the situation. And he does a Let's Play of his own life in his room.
Yeah, it's very well done. Like, it's done as only an internet native can do.
Yeah.
Being somebody who's talking in that flat tone, the way I imagine Twitch streamers talk.
Yeah.
And then superimposed on a video of him playing, what is it, like being an NPC?
No, he'd be a player character.
A player character. But a player character who only cries and basically cries.
Cry, play piano, hold flashlight like a cop.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's quite fun. And here I'm going to call direct attention to the motif of Bo watching himself.
Mm.
I would say a lot of this is self-observational comedy or just self-observational commentary, which is interesting. It's not something that's really done a lot. I think that specific kind of observational comedy. perhaps many comedians don't feel comfortable doing that kind of thing. It's certainly uncomfortable to watch, and I would say uncomfortable to do, whether you're under several layers of character or not, or peeling back layers of character, which is what we see back in the reacting to my reacting thing.
Right.
I also want to point out, again, I am talking about Bo, the character, in the context of this piece. Never assume I am saying anything about the real flesh and meat person outside of the space. I understand this is difficult when referring to this specific piece of art. I've called it parasocially difficult to Mom. Yeah. It kind of brings you in there and makes you want to know a person. But no, in the context of the piece. All of this.
The character, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that all of these scenes of him watching himself mm-hmm. is also resonant at this moment when a lot of office workers who ended up working from home have ended up in that position, even though we are not performers, we are not entertainers, and yet we are looking at ourselves mm-hmm. on video calls all the time. And I don't know why the interface wants me to look at my face when I am talking to other
right?
people, but
right?
but here I am looking at, like, just so aware of how I look all the time now, right?
Yeah. And similarly, there are a lot of shots which are just focusing on the blinking red light of the camera being on mm-hmm. in the background, which also comes back to this idea of being constantly watched and constantly observing and constantly watched and constantly observing and constantly watched and constantly observing, which is also a very internet sort of idea.
Yeah.
And a thing created really by the internet. Before, that was a thing celebrities probably experienced. And that's about it. Or people at a similar level of social notoriety. But now, if you choose to have a Twitter presence, you can be that person.
Yeah.
One day you'll be the main character. You just have to bide your time, right? We've earned sexting. Have we earned swear words, Mom?
No swear words.
Okay. S**** is yes. the next song, paired up with All Time Low. I kind of consider them the same song. They're split up on the soundtrack, which I don't know if I agree with. I think it makes it harder to shuffle the show because they need to go together. But yeah. Whatever. This is a fun, jaunty tune about not taking care of yourself because you cannot compel yourself to, and falling into this cycle of unceasing self-loathing because you aren't taking care of yourself, but because you don't like yourself, you're having a hard time taking care of yourself.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure people went through to some degree during the pandemic, as you ran out of the things to do to distract you from the existential dread of being alive. Think back on that time. Maybe it's right now. Am I helping? But yeah, what do you think of this pair up here?
So this is where I started to think how much of this is real, mm-hmm. right? Which then we had a big long talk about yeah. that, and I don't know if we want to get into that now or if we want to wait towards later.
You can choose to go with a different interpretation. I just know that I overall enjoy art more when I'm looking at it within itself and not bringing in outside baggage, unless that baggage is like something grotesquely horrible that the creator did that makes me not want to support the art anymore, which yeah. is like a high threshold I have to have, because otherwise I can't enjoy anything.
So my initial reaction, which I think I have come around to not thinking anymore, but my initial reaction was that if this is true despair, that we are witnessing, I don't want to watch that. And if it isn't true despair, isn't it kind of cheap and gross for him to kind of play that for attention? Mm-hmm. The only way I can actually reconcile that is taking your opinion, which is this is art.
Yeah.
Real is not a is not a relevant concept when we're evaluating the value of this.
Yeah, that's my take, and it allows me to enjoy things much more than I would otherwise, which is a good sign to me. But yeah, this is actually it's one of the more internet song type things, and so I'm kind of used to that sort of extreme negativity presented casually, like I talked about earlier, right? That's just kind of part of the language of the internet, whether that's good or not. And so I see that and I don't have harsh emotional reactions that somebody who's not as used to that might have. And so I think that also accounts for a lot of our difference besides how we approached it at the beginning is I'm just more used to hearing stuff like that presented cheerfully and going, yeah, like mood vibe. I would almost describe it because it's so upbeat musically and harsh lyrically, mm-hmm. as like negative toxic positivity.
Yeah, that's a very good description, yeah. of that, actually. Yeah, yeah.
And that jumps us right into Welcome to the Internet, which is, yes. the crowning piece and the grandest villain song of the villain songs.
I heard someone, I think it was on NPR Pop Culture Happy Hour, called it like a Carnival Barker kind of persona who is singing this song about just the relentless overabundance of stuff.
Content.
Of content that, yeah. that is the internet.
And we have mountains of content, some better, some worse. Yes.
and the chorus is, can I interest you in everything all of the time? Which is an earworm that will, absolutely. Get stuck in your head. But it is exactly how it is, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I think it does poke at Silicon Valley a little bit again as well when it talks about like the grand dream of the internet early on, right? Like, well, it's this access to everything and it's beautiful. And I love that in the section where it's supposed to be softer and more hopeful, there are still lines that can be interpreted villainously, like the line, now look at you, right? Which, like, look at you, you brave little kid, or look at you right now in this moment, trapped in this cycle. Yeah. And then, like, describing, like, all of these positive traits, and then including watchable, mm-hmm. in the list of, mm-hmm. traits. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yes! Like, I love lyrical moments that you can pick out on re-listening, and it's the kind of thing that somebody could change in a cover and change the song, mm-hmm. you know, and I love lines like that. Like, that's what makes a song good to me, is having space for ambiguities like that. And yeah, this is just very, very tight lyrically overall, and just a very clean piece in a very messy part of the show, which I think really makes it stand out. Yeah. Yes. and I'm fond of it the way I'm fond of the internet. Like, I'm like, yes, absolutely, this is familiar and comforting, even if it's bad for me, you know.
And it's like, it's literally too much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's overwhelming by design.
Yeah, yeah. It takes a long time to hear all of the words, mm-hmm. in it. But you will listen to it enough to hear all the words in it, because it's great. It's fun to listen to. And this leads into the moment where Bo declares, I'm going to work on this special forever. Never mind. Like, I'm talking to nobody right now. I'm just going to keep working on this, because otherwise I don't have anything to do.
Right.
which I've definitely relegated projects to that before as well. Like, actually, no, the world doesn't get to see this one. It's just in the Google Docs, constantly being added to. absolutely. And that doesn't produce great art. It just produces a comforting space to vent, which is fine and healthy. And that leads into Bezos 2, which I would say is the true breakdown rather than S asterisk asterisk asterisk. Okay. Is Bezos 2, in my opinion.
Right.
Like, that one really tells me where he's at creatively more than S asterisk 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 does. I will make this as clunky for you as possible because you put me in this prison.
But I just don't want to have to hit explicit.
Nobody actually uses that correctly. You know that, right?
I like to follow rules. We know this. This anyway. Is like my main character trait.
What do you think of Bezos too?
Well, okay. So the first thing is he is... This costume that he's wearing for Bezos 2 is like... Is it a costume or is it like his hair has actually grown to be an entire... Like, he's covered in fur. Kind of, right? Like, yeah. He has this weird fur coat on. And it's just like a disco thing. I don't know. Like, you have derived much more meaning from the Bezos eye than I have.
Well, like, at the beginning, Bezos 1 is a joke song among joke songs, right? Like, I'm able to derive from it, but also part of its presence is it being a moment of like, well, I didn't have anything like complete to put here, but here's what was on my mind at the time and I wrote a hook for it, so here we go, right? And that thing, that tiny little thing, is full of hooks, which is why it got all over TikTok and went super viral. But then Bezos 2 is coming back to that moment of close to out of ideasness and milking a little bit more out of it, which makes both so much more powerful to me. And that's where it tells me, like, I have to keep making this, and I'm going to hide the fact that I have less than nothing to say by making it very ostentatious, right? I enjoy Bezos, which I know you never will, and that's okay.
Yeah,
you did it. Congratulations. I like that it's a little nothing of a song. And then we go to a bit where he's doing stand-up, and the ominous laughter actually isn't present here. It's birds chirping. And there's a quote that I grabbed that I thought was kind of encapsulating the point of this bit, that the outside world, the non-digital world, is merely a theatrical space in which one stages and records content for the much more real, much more vital digital space.
Yeah.
And boy, didn't that become kind of true during the pandemic, or reveal that it was true already for a lot of people.
Yeah. It gave me echoes. This is a book that I read so long ago that I might even be misremembering it. But it gave me echoes of Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, where people take this drug called Soma. It's like the real world is their dreams. Not the real, real world. It's a little bit like The Matrix, too, okay. I guess. Yeah, that's what I feel like the internet has created, this liminal space that feels more real than the real world.
Yeah, and every once in a while people ask, like, well, if humanity was put into a Matrix situation where they were living happy, normal lives... internally, without being able to affect anything in the external world, like, is that okay? Would you be content with that being the situation? And honestly, if I actually think about it within myself and I go, okay, well, this is magically satisfactory to people as long as they do not have the knowledge that there's an external world, I don't think I can have a problem with it. Like, yeah, sure, fine. Neat. Which is, I wonder how much the internet has shaped me not having a lot of resistance to that, not having any feeling that, no, I have to be doing something real for it to be powerful. Like, I just, maybe part of it is also, and this leads into the next song, feel that I have a very little ability to exert meaningful change on the world.
Right.
And so it doesn't feel that different to me than my current experience as a young person in a world that is more politically and environmentally wrought than it was when I was 10 years old, than when I was 2 years old, arguably, right? Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of watching things get worse as I get older, which is not actually an experience that people had for maybe two generations, not millennials. Millennials, which is why I can connect to here,
right,
absolutely have this experience of getting older and feeling the doom seep in.
Right.
But maybe part of the reason why the Gen Xers and especially the boomers are much less despondent about this and much less concerned about this being gestures to the real meat space that isn't petty problems that can be resolved or fought over eternally online, uh-huh, is because they grew up and watched things get better as they got older. And I'm not saying nothing's gotten better as I've gotten older, but there's certainly a feeling of peril that's been very palpable in me for since I was maybe able to process the climate crisis as a thing. So,
like, I hear you. I feel like every generation in the Western world has its own reason for angst,
yeah,
that is external and feels too big to do anything about, and some people try to do something about it and other people don't. Like, there was the threat of nuclear war during my time, that was also the case, you know, in the 50s for some boomers. And mm-hmm, the thing that's different, or one thing that's different, is economic progress. Like, people, the sort of belief that you would be better off than your parents,
yeah,
is a thing that you don't have, right, in your generation, and millennials don't have in their generation. But
sometimes older people will talk to me about my hypothetical future house, and I have to, like, just look at them and smile and go, like, oh yeah, the house I'll definitely be able to have based on current trends. And maybe I'll be able to get there, but yeah, that's increasingly not the material reality. So, yeah. And this discussion kind of leads into that funny feeling, which is a reflection on all of the chaos and anxiety-provoking realities of meat space, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just like a soft little guitar song, very sort of We Didn't Start the Fire, listing loosely connected contemporary concepts. Yeah. That was such pretty alliteration I came up with just in my head.
Very nice.
one of my notes here is just the all-consuming climate anxiety, mm-hmm, which isn't exclusively what the song's about, but two ending songs here, the three ending songs here, talk about that a little bit more. And it's kind of just an undercurrent of a lot of left-wing and centrist, I guess you could argue, art from the last 5 years or so by millennials, by Zoomers. Like, climate anxiety is just present,
yeah,
constantly in a way that I see anybody not talking about it when it could be talked about, and I'm like, why are you talking about it? Like, it's a thing I've learned to live with because I've lived with it for most of my life, but also the lack of urgency is, it makes you want to shut down, which is what the next song kind of touches on. And my favorite line from that funny feeling is 20,000 years of this, seven more to go, which, mm-hmm, I believe is a reference to the forecast for when the climate crisis is irreversible.
Right.
And it's so fatalist and ominous, but also, like, within the context of the song, it's presented as a long time coming. Like, well, of course, like we didn't deserve to keep the planet after all of this. And it's incredible that we've had it for this long and we're not going to have it anymore. And yeah. I know.
It's comedy. It's but a comedy special.
it's kind of cathartically dark for me, even as I know that slipping into that doomeristic mindset is a bad thing to do and mm-hmm. not productive mm-hmm. and part of the problem. Mm-hmm. But it feels good to just let go and say, like, and just move on to the acceptance stage of grief instead of holding on to your anger in order to prevent the grief from having to happen. Like, just start processing it now, which is, yeah. Did you have that deep of a
no.
resonance? I'm guessing no. I would say that's a very clear age division, and I'm not saying you aren't concerned about the climate crisis. I'm just saying the way that it's been constantly present in my life is different. So, yeah. And then this leads into All Eyes on Me, which I would say is the last villain song.
Yeah.
And he's
the most villain song, yeah. I think. Like, more villainous than...
He's Welcome more villainous in it. It's less yeah. of a villain song in terms of, like, structure than Welcome to mm-hmm. the Internet, which I would say, like, could go in a musical as a villain song and fit.
Right.
Put it in the next Wreck-It Ralph or whatever. Right? There we go. They'll love the Harry Potter line in that one. But in terms of the... It is... Boad is most loathsome since How the World Works,
yes.
I would say. And he's playing this egomaniac comedian, and there's more of that Christ imagery. He's asking his audience to pray for him. He's giving them all of these commands and just exerting control over his audience. Mm-hmm. And this brings back the laugh track again mm-hmm. and has him actually working with the laugh track instead of just kind of being laughed at in a more disembodied way. And this is another moment where you could read it as a breakdown, although obviously a more harsh and upsetting breakdown than, like, Bezos too, which is a fun, goofy breakdown. But yeah, this one gets quite intense. I would
choose your
yeah.
flavor of
crisis. Yes.
Yeah. And it ends with him, like, slapping the camera down, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then he has his processing and going, I'm done this thing. Which means I have to finish it up and put it out there and let it go. And it is no longer the entirety of my artistic life anymore. And that is really, in a lot of ways, the hardest part. Of the creative process for me. Like, I find writing very easy. I find performing very easy. As soon as it comes down to, like, editing and publishing something, I'm like, Mom, stop telling me about this thing. I wash my hands of this. I will not be accountable for what I have podcasted, which is, of course, not a... That's a fantasy I'm creating for myself.
Yes.
But that's something I connect to. And then there's the song Goodbye, which has a lot of, I would say, parasocially challenging, but kind of comforting and warm and friendly lyrics that kind of almost take you down from the emotional height that you just hit and bring you back to a place of comfort and stability and evenness, almost. Mm. Like, that's what the first bit is. It's kind of melancholic, but it gives you a chance to catch your breath after All Eyes on Me.
Right.
And then he goes into a series of reprises of previous songs, mm-hmm. Starting with Welcome to the Internet, the A Little Bit of Everything, All of the Time, and just kind of building into ending with the, in my opinion, prettiest thing that he's written in this whole thing, which is the Well, Well, Look Who's Inside Again bit, which is distorted and, in my opinion, prettier, but also spookier and more unsettling, and it's just closing in on him. And that is the final song of the main show. Mm-hmm. And after that, we have a wordless skit where the door, which we've been seeing throughout this whole thing in various forms, whether it's an objective that he can't complete in the video game, or whether it's like an ominous foe that he's making eye contact with but not taking action towards, or whatever, it creaks open and now he can go outside. And he hesitates and he hesitates and he does. And then he can't get back inside. And the laugh track starts roaring at him as he's trying in this very like silent film comedic way. Mm-hmm. But it's like true emotional distress.
Yes.
Within the context of the thing, not speaking to his emotional distress as a real person,
yes.
But the character in the thing is very emotionally distressed.
Yeah.
And then we continue to zoom out with the laughter, and we see that this is being projected on the wall of the room, and Bo again is watching himself, and end of the thing.
Yeah. I was thinking at the beginning, and then I will come back to it now at the end, that when you used to say stand-up comedy special, what that meant was a guy with a mic and a glass of water.
And a reliable audience of people who will laugh at whatever he says, because that's right. Their job.
That's right. And a brick wall backdrop telling jokes for an hour.
Right? Yeah.
And you compare that to this in terms of complexity and talent and emotional depth and artistic merit and everything. It's like
versatility rather than talent, I would say. Yeah.
Talent. Okay. I think that the songs that he writes are... they're good songs, and they're...
I just meant in comparison. Like, I feel like you just kind of called all stand-up comedians untalented by implication there.
No,
which you can
stand
by.
No, but what I mean is that the craft of, like, what cut it as being a decent work is, like, that doesn't cut it compared to this. This is... like just so much more. And I think that this we've talked about this throughout the history of this podcast about how modern creation, I think, amplified and complexified by the internet, is just better than what we could do with less sophisticated tools and understanding at our disposal.
And freedom as well is a big aspect of it. Like, he is both liberated by his fame, but also potentially constrained by it, because you tend to, at his level of stardom, have a lot of obligations to essentially your shareholders, and there's a lot of encouragement to play things safe. And so watching somebody who started on the internet kind of almost reclaiming his control over how he presents his comedy, using all of these internet motifs and just generally the cinematic language and literally the language of the internet to create something that I would say is not safe, right? In the same way that doing another special to a masked crowd or whatever would have been as a comeback, right? Like, it's such a unique piece of art, and it's not unique amongst, like, independently created YouTube videos. It's unique amongst Netflix specials, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing that you look at, and this is so different from all of that, whereas in some ways it has more similarities to YouTube videos I've watched, which is... it's incredible to see something that takes that format be able to be successful on a more formalized, more professional stage, because that's saying it's okay for this to be art, not content, right?
Yes. Yeah.
You can call it art because it is. And people react to it as art, not a BuzzFeed listicle.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I care about this stuff. I care about what this represents almost more than I care about the show itself. It's great. I enjoy it. Many of the songs are bangers. It's rewarding upon rewatch. It's all of the things you want. But more than any of that, I'm like, I want more of this kind of thing. And that's what's exciting to me, is the newness and what its success says about the future of art and allowing for things to continue to evolve, especially as things like movies increasingly stagnate, which is a thing I complain about a lot, right? Like, it's room for things to keep getting better, which I need.
Okay, Bo, so you just poured your heart out and wrung your soul out for a year to create this piece of art. And get on it. Elizabeth wants more.
I want more from people at large. It doesn't need to be this guy.
Do you know my last little bit of hopefulness, since this is where you are and I'm going to grab that and keep you there. This also reminded me of a really good Fringe play, and it made me excited about Fringe coming back, because I feel like he is remarkably talented, but he is not the only talent in the world. And there's so many different ways to comment on the human condition. And in a few weeks, we're going to get it to see some.
Yes. Okay. We did it. We watched it. Would you recommend this to people in general?
Yeah, I would recommend it.
Be in the right headspace to watch things that might upset you.
Yes, it is. There's a lot of upsetting parts of it. So you need to be prepared for that. And I would recommend watching it with a younger person. Not too little, not too young of a person, because there are adult themes, as we said. But I got a lot out of it, a lot more out of it by watching it with you. It's you can Netflix with your mom, not just FaceTime with your mom. All right. Well, thank you for sticking with us through this very long bonus episode. Perhaps real episode.
Bonus we'll episode, B-O in parentheses, nuts episode.
You can follow our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever else pods are cast. I feel so weird now making this play for, like, listen to our content, support us.
Oh, Mom, this is content, not art.
This is content, not art. That's true. You can find our show notes and all of the links that we have mentioned at thatsathing.transistor.fm. You can also find us and the rest of the outstanding members of the Alberta Podcast Network at albertapodcastnetwork.com. Fonda just added a whole bunch of shows to the network, so we have many more new brethren and sistern. Many thanks.
They folk.
Okay, I'll change that. We have many more comrades, compatriots. Let's say compatriots in the
no politics.
In the
network.
We are on Twitter at That's a Thing Yeg. You can always email us a question or a comment at thatsathingyeg@gmail.com. Is that everything?
It was a lot of things.
It was a lot of things. Thanks. Thanks, sweetheart.
Bye. This is going to be longer than we intended. Shocking no one.